Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
In a week where we're recognising everything that our mum does for us around Australia, we're going to take a moment to recognise the open-hearted foster mums of this country. At this moment, there are around 40,000 children under orders from the court, which means that these kids are deemed to be living in troubled homes and might be better off outside of them, at least for a short time. Just over half of those children are living with relatives, and the other half are with foster families. In New South Wales, the state government has handed over the oversight of the care of these kids to non-government organisations, NGOs. And we're going to speak with a couple of foster mums today, including our first guest, who's also the social media officer for Fostering New South Wales. Liz Potten, it's a pleasure to meet you. How long ago did this handover take place?
It's very new. It's been happening for just over 2 years. I think it was 2 years in March, and it's going well. It's an enormous transition for the sector.
Yeah.
And a lot of agencies who are just starting and getting themselves going, getting their systems in place, trying to recruit foster carers, and then kids are being transferred across. They've just passed the tipping point. So I think more than 2,000 kids have been transferred to the NGO sector from the government.
And how are we making sure that nobody falls through the cracks as we change hands?
That's a good question. Every non-government organisation that's offering foster care in New South Wales has to be accredited by the Office of the Children's Guardian.
Okay.
And then children that are under the care of the minister, is what it's called, once they get court orders, are transferred from the government department still has to bring them into care in the first place, and then they transfer them over to the agencies.
The nature of families has changed in and of itself in a lifetime. So what are the new challenges that face foster carers?
I think challenges facing foster carers are probably the same challenges that they were before, that kids who come into care often have been traumatised and have difficult behaviours. They need a whole lot of love and patience. But I think the difficulties in recruiting foster carers is that the nature of the Australian family has changed. The old-fashioned idea of mum and dad staying, when a couple of kids and mum stays at home and then can take on a few foster kids, that's just not the case anymore. More and more women are in the workforce. More and more older children are staying at home. The empty nesters are getting older and older because the birdies don't fly from the nest.
That's
anymore
true.
So much. Yeah, so there's a whole range of things that many people are more time poor and it's almost like fostering has had to be brought back into the public consciousness. People are less aware of it. They don't really understand the difference between fostering and adoption. Of course, there's very few children that are put up for adoption in Australia.
Yeah.
And people don't really understand what fostering is, what it means. They're worried that they'll have to, in inverted commas, give the child back.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is the case. In an ideal situation, if a family's having a tough time and a child has to come into foster care for a short amount of time, the families can sort themselves out and the kids can go home and be with their own family. So sometimes, yes, children need to be given back. But I think people who are thinking about fostering need to understand that you have to have an open heart and be willing to have your heart broken to know that you can love these kids for a short amount of time, maybe up to a few months, even a couple of years, and then know that what's best for the child would be maybe to go back to their family or move on to a longer-term placement. And that's okay, because you're making a difference in that child's life by loving them and supporting them, even if it's for a short amount of time. I think one of the pushes that we're doing in this campaign is to try and recruit single people, younger women particularly, but younger people who might not be yet in their lifetime partnership, that you can do respite care, that which might be one weekend a month and then one week in the school holidays. There's a whole variety of options, and that it doesn't have to look like you take on a child for the rest of their life, although it certainly can look like that as well.
It's a brand new experience when you put your hand up and say, you know what, we're willing to open our home to a little life or a grown-up child, an adolescent, if you will. These are all very stressful things to consider. Mm. How can we be sure that it's not just going to be us doing this on our own?
Well, that's one of the benefits in New South Wales of the transition to the non-government sector. When it was just run through the department, the caseworker ratios were really high. They were really busy. They were trying to do child protection as well. And carers often complained that they didn't get enough support. And what's been shown in places like Victoria, where it is an all a non-government system, is that the ratios are lower, so you have much more contact with your caseworker. You get much more support. There is some remuneration, but that's mainly just to cover costs. It's certainly, you know, nobody's going to get rich from becoming a foster carer, that's for sure.
that's, of course,
that's not why you do it.
Yeah.
But they offer 24-hour support helplines. They'll offer respite care wherever they can, especially if it's a child with disabilities, so that the foster parents, foster family can have a break from needing to care for those children full-time. There's a whole range of support systems in place, and that's if you were thinking about becoming a carer, that would be something that you would need to discuss with the agency before you, you know, as you went into it to find out, you know, what the supports are.
Liz, I'm going to ask you to change hats for me now.
Okay.
Take off social media officer hat and put on foster mum hat.
Yes, yes.
What compelled you to become a foster carer?
Well, my husband and I had always thought that we'd be interested in fostering children after we had our own children. We have two beautiful biological children who are now 17, nearly 17 and 15. And after that, I wasn't able to have any more children. And interestingly, not long after all this had become apparent, some people moved in across the road from where we were living who were foster carers. And like so many people who become foster carers, having met people who were doing it, it demystifies it.
Yeah.
And we thought, yeah, what's to stop us doing this now? So we went through the training. It takes between 4 to 6 months to do the training. And then we got a phone call saying, would you, it turned out to be a baby. Often it's not babies, but this was back when the what was called the baby bonus went to $5,000. And unfortunately, there were more babies at that stage coming into foster care. And they said, will you take this baby for a few months? And we were planning to go to Bible college. And I was going to study full-time as well. Our big kids were in primary school at that time. And we took this little girl home. We were driving home with her in the car. She was 15 days old. And we looked at each other and went, oh, what are we going to do? It's the idea of looking up, opening our homes to widows and orphans.
Yeah.
I think in this day and age, foster children are the modern-day orphans. Obviously, they have biological parents, but they don't have a safe home that they can live in. And so if we can open our hearts and homes to look after these children, then we're doing a wonderful service to them.
And how old is your foster daughter now?
She's 8.
And you know her mum?
I do know her mum, yes. We organise the contact visits. She has some siblings as well who are also all in care. We organise contact visits with her mum and with her siblings as well, and we have phone conversations. We've known since she was 6 months old, that was when her long-term orders came through, that she's not ever going to be able to go home. So we view her absolutely as one of our children, our daughter.
Yeah.
But she knows who she is, she knows where she's come from, and she thinks it's fantastic. She thinks she's super special that she's got two mums and these other brothers and a sister, you know.
Yeah.
fun things with them, it's great.
Best life ever, she's thinking.
That's certainly how she views it, yeah.
Yeah. Is yours an uncommon experience in foster care?
Probably yes, because we got brought her home when she immediately came into care. She came to us and then was able to stay with us.
Yeah.
That probably is uncommon. As much as possible, they're trying to reduce the number of moves that children in foster care have. In the old, bad old days, they used to move them every 2 years. I really don't know why. I think it was before they understood attachment theory. They thought that was the best idea. But of course, it's disastrous for the kids psychologically. So they try as much as possible. So when a child comes into care, they may go to, of course, you know, these things are not planned. Often they don't know when kids are going to come into care. It comes to a head. They're brought into care. They need to find a family for them for a short amount of time before they can go to a long-term placement or a longer-term placement.
Where do I start to learn more about foster care? In particular, Fostering New South Wales.
Fostering New South Wales is a campaign that's been running for just under 12 months. Certainly there's a great need for foster carers in New South Wales. They said at the beginning of the campaign they needed 900 new carers just to keep up with the need. That's not even having any extra carers. The best place to start, if you're online, is the Fostering New South Wales website, which is fosteringnsw.com.au. We also have a free call number that you can call up and speak to one of our phone operators about what it means to be a carer, what it's like. They can help you look up agencies in your area. And the number there is 1-800-236-783. And if you're in another state, you can call that 1-800 number and we can give you the number for who you should call in your state.
Liz, thank you so much for your time and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you, and you're very welcome. I'm happy to have a chat.
We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Foster mum and social media officer for Fostering New South Wales, Liz Potten. Megan Rossi is a foster mum through Anglicare with a real heart for fostering babies. Megan, welcome to Open House. How did your foster mum journey kick off?
Well, when my youngest child, who's now 5, when she was around about 2, I thought I didn't want to have any more children of my own, but I still have place in my life, in my heart, to look after children. And I think at that time, God just put in front of my eyes the idea of foster care everywhere. Over a short space of time, I would hear it on the radio, I'd see pamphlets at shops, I'd meet other foster carers just at random places, all in the space of about a month or two. And so then I decided to make the call to Anglicare, and I asked them, do they have a need for foster carers to look after babies? Because all I could fit in my life and with the children, my own children being the age they were, were babies. Right. And they said yes, and then down the track we did the training, did everything, and now we're foster carers.
I suspect while they may not have said it to you in person, they probably said, have we? You bet we do.
Yes. They said, yes, there is a need, even for babies.
Okay, let's talk about that process where, after you made that phone call, the kind of assistance either through education and ongoing support, as well as other supports that are available to foster parents when they start this relationship with these beautiful kids.
Well, they do quite a thorough training. Every agency you go to follows a very similar training process. They do screening, so they'll come for an initial interview where they'll sort of initially screen you and you them to see whether this is something that's going to work for your family, mm-hmm. and whether you can really fit a child, another child, into your family. That's a quick screening. And then you do training, which is quite in-depth. They do a lot of training about the kinds of problems that children could have, the kind of relationship you can have with them, the different kinds of foster caring. There are different kinds of foster caring that you can do. And so you do all this training. It's over a weekend and then four evenings, I think it was for us. And then after that, then you apply to become a foster carer. And then after that, we went through five interviews, including interviewing our children.
Yeah.
And then they will write a report about you that goes to their panel. And if they approve you, then you can get on their list to be foster carers. And then I've found, with the babies that we've looked after, the social workers that we've had come, their caseworkers, the caseworker belongs with the child, mm-hmm. have been incredibly helpful. They've always said, ring us if there's anything you're worried about. You know, so if there's something just tiny, just like I found a lump on a baby's head and I thought, oh, you know, I don't know what that is, I just ring them up and say, I found this, I'm going to take them to the doctor. And they'll tell you, they'll tell me, the baby needs to see the doctor on this day and that day just for checkups or for other things. And they've got a 24-hour pager. You can always, so if your caseworker's not there, you can always get somebody if you're having trouble with your child. And, yeah, I've always found them. I've found the ones I've had at Anglicare very supportive.
It's affirming that everybody is being so well represented. Megan, can you share with us that first time you welcomed a new bub into your house as a foster mum, what that was like and the trials, the triumphs that came with that?
It was incredibly surreal. It was quite different experience going to a hospital, picking up a baby. It was from a hospital that I had one of my children at.
No.
And I went to that same hospital, picked up this baby and took him home. I thought, oh, this newborn six-day-old baby. And with no sort of fanfare, because I only had a short notice before I picked him up. And, oh, it's quite intense to just go and pick up this newborn that you've not had 9 months to get to know while you're pregnant. They're just, you've had an hour's notice or two, or had a day that time. And, oh, and just pick him up and bring him home. Oh, it was quite amazing. But then my four children, were very excited because they love it, especially my daughters love it, although I'll often find my sons out there with one of the babies we've had playing with them or just looking at them and talking to them. Mm. Or I can, you know, or they'll hold them for me and rock them, or they get involved, they do lots of it, and they love it. They love it. And it was hard for them to understand at first why a baby wouldn't be able to stay with its own parents.
Yeah.
And so we sort of give them a version of that they can understand.
Yes.
That their parents are unable for reasons we don't know, and we don't know.
Yep.
Usually, but their parents can't do it. So we're going to look after this baby for a while until they can go to their forever home.
How do you deal with the saying goodbye?
Look, that's the worst part, actually. that's for us, because we're temporary carers. So a lot of foster carers are permanent carers, mm-hmm. and they don't have to say goodbye. They keep those babies until they're, or those children until they're 18. For us, we're temporary carers, so that's the very worst part of it. So it's sad, and I have had to give my, one of my daughters has a very soft heart, and she has to have a day or two off school and just to cry and say goodbye. It's awful. It's really bad. And that's the biggest question I get asked, or the most often asked, is how can you give them up?
Yeah.
And I hate it. I hate giving them up. But I sort of think if I didn't hate it, then I probably shouldn't do it. Because that they need that kind of love, that means they're really wanted. And so I think, even though it's sad for us, I think we can cope with it. But that baby still needed somewhere to stay. So I say to my kids, oh, well, we've got a happy family, so we can share that with someone who needs it just for a little while. And we'll be sad when they leave, but then we'll be okay again, and that baby will have had a really good time with us. So we want to give them up. And one of the other foster carers, when we were doing our training, she said, we want to give them up full. So we want to give them up full of love, full of all they need.
It's a wonderfully sacrificial love that foster parents have for their children, whether they be short or long stay. How has it changed your family dynamic?
I think it just gives my children a sense of caring for someone outside of their... who's not going to give anything back to them, I guess, outside of their family. It gives them a sense that there are people who need to be loved just because they need it, not because they're going to give anything back to you. They just need some care and love, and it gives them a perspective of caring for other people. We also have a couple of children we sponsor overseas, and that kind of thing, I think, just builds their sense of there's children who have needs. We have more than enough of, whether it's our money or our time or our love, and so we can share that with them. So I think it helps my children to understand that there are people who don't have all that they have, and children who don't have all that they have, and that we can share.
How did you know it was right for you to make that first phone call?
Look, I think it was God for me. I think it was God putting it everywhere in front of me, and I knew that that it was the right thing to do. I think my circumstances were good for it, where I have a family that doesn't have a lot of special needs, like where my children are lovely and my husband and I have a great marriage. I'm not working. I've been a full-time mum for a while now, and I think it could fit, and there was no reason not to. And the things that, yes, it's hard to go back to waking up at night. It's hard if you've got a baby that's sick or is withdrawing from drugs or whatever. It can be hard, and emotionally it's hard, and then it's hard again to let them go. But I can do it, and they need the babies and the children. They just need people to just do it, just to make the call and do it.
Megan, how do you celebrate Mother's Day? It sounds like a remarkable household.
Oh, we're pretty ordinary in a lot of ways. It sounds like that, but it's not. We're ordinary in a lot of ways. I think, I don't know what we'll do. We'll go to church, and then I think, I don't know, maybe someone will make me lunch, or I'll call my mum, because she's not close to me geographically. I'll call her on the phone, and the others will make me stuff.
There must be something so wonderfully mysterious about wondering what becomes of the little lives that pass through your place, and from an outsider's perspective, a wonderful, rich blessing as well, to perhaps even for just a short window touch somebody at a time when they need just to be held. Megan Rosser, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much.
Megan Rosser, fostering babies through Anglicare. Today we're honouring the remarkable foster mums of Australia, and Kerry Gorman is not only a foster mum, but also Queensland's nominee for Barnardo's Mother of the Year. Kerry has two children of her own, including Melissa Gorman, a champion Olympic swimmer. More than 20 kids have come through Kerry's home for care. All but one of the six kids in full-time care right now at Kerry's place have multiple disabilities. Kerry's interrupting her lunch for us today. Kerry, firstly, congratulations on your nomination for Mother of the Year. How did you find out that your friend Nolene had nominated you for this award?
Oh, it happened was I was out for lunch with some friends of mine here in Queensland, and Bernardo's rang me and told me that I'd come into the top six finalists, and Nolene had nominated me and read out what she had written, and tears were just rolling down my face. And my girlfriends that were sitting there were going, "Oh my goodness, are you okay? Can you just put the thumbs up or the thumbs down?" And so I put my thumb up, and when I got off the phone, I was just like, I was just taken that, you know, what she'd written about my children and me just is what I see in the children every day. And so it's nice that somebody else can see that.
Let's talk about those gorgeous kids. You're a foster mum of some, what, 15 or 16 years?
Yeah. I've been looking after children for something like 25 years now, sometimes for when the mums used to go to work, and then I moved into foster care, and I just get so much out of it. I just love what I do, and I feel like, you know, if I can just help one child, then, you know, it's all worth it, and they just give me back everything and more that I give them.
Kerry, as if your heart's not big enough already, you also have a passion for disadvantaged and disabled children, don't you?
Yes, I do. I work a lot with severe cerebral palsy children, and they are just so special. It's just so beautiful to see them achieve things and to do things just from a little bit of love, you know, and it's just very, very rewarding. And you know, when you walk into their room or to their bedroom and in the mornings, and they just, their smile, it's just beautiful, you know. And even they can't see, but they can, obviously the other senses take place, and it's just beautiful.
Kerry, share with us a little more about some of the kids you have in your home right now.
There's a little boy that when he first came to me, he was two, and he was described that he didn't have a very long life expectancy, and he's got severe cerebral palsy, he's got epilepsy, cortical visual impairment, he's nil by mouth, he's got severe reflux, and he is unable to sit or anything by himself, and he turns nine soon. So
outstanding!
He's like he's been put in a pot of love, and he's just blossomed.
And you cared for a little girl who's blind, deaf, and has suffered from awful burns as well.
Yes, I did. I had her for a little while there, just before Christmas, and I really didn't want to let her go. But yeah, would love to have kept her.
You sound like, along with being a mum of two of your own gorgeous kids, one of whom is an Olympic champion, no less, you just haven't got enough ways to share your love, have you?
Not really. my door is always open for anyone, really, you know. It's funny because when I was announced the Queensland Bernardo's Mother of the Year, my children put a little thing on Facebook, and one of my sons' friends commented on it and said, "Oh my goodness, so deserving, you took me in when I really needed somebody." And I'd forgotten about that.
Wow.
And that touched me as well, and I thought, oh, that's nice, you know, because my son used to bring home guys that just couldn't stay at home, and you know, he'd say, "Mum, is it all right if he stays?" And I'm like, yeah, it's all right, mate, you know. So yeah, my heart and my home is always welcome for you know, people like that. And
Kerry, I look at stories like yours, and I marvel not only at the open door that you have to induct people into your little family, if only for a short time, but then having to face saying goodbye as well. Mm. How do you deal with that?
That's a bit difficult. It is difficult, but you just have to realise that foster parents are really just a little safe haven for the children. So our real aim is to get them back to their mum and dad if possible. And if we can do that, then we, you know, that is the best place for them. So I just tell myself that. And I also tell myself that if, you know, I have taught them one thing in life, and that is to believe in themselves and, you know, to do what they can in life, then that's how I manage to prepare myself.
What advice this Mum's Day would you have for people who are considering opening their doors as foster parents?
I think that if you've got the time and the heart and just some love, that's all these children need. And you know, why not try and have a go and see if you like it? I mean, it's very rewarding, and you know, sometimes it's hard, and you think, oh dear, you know, these poor little things. But I think that if you can open up your heart and your door and let them in and just treasure them, it's beautiful.
Kerry, how many kids have you got in your place right now, as of today?
Today I have 7.
And how much sleep are you getting a night on average?
Not very much at the moment. I just put the baby in a toddler bed, so she's trying to get into bed with me at the moment.
And they age, what, youngest to oldest?
The youngest is, she's 2 in June, so she's 20 months. And this is flying, actually. 20 months, and the oldest is now 21.
Congratulations on the miraculous changes that you've brought about in kids' lives all over that state already. Well done, and a deserving nominee for Mother of the Year, Kerry Gorman.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you very much.